Today on the Pure Sweat Basketball Show.
So almost all of our time is based on skills and micro skills.
Maybe I led you to believe it was easy when it wasn't. Maybe I made you think my highlights started at the free throw line and not in the gym.
Turn my headphones up!
Let's eliminate the will to win and think about the will to prepare to win.
That's how winning is done.
It's about being a great teammate. It's about being accountable to one another. It's about being tough. It's about doing the right things for each other, but it's about doing it every day.
Hi, this is Jay Billis of ESPN. You're listening to the Pure Sweat Basketball Show. I'm sweating already.
Thanks for tuning into the show that actually teaches the game by making every episode a micro clinic. I'm your host, Alan Stein. Today's show is brought to you by Dr. Dish, the shooting machine that's taking training to the next level. In today's episode, Drew discusses how to design an effective player development workout. But before we jump in, did you know that high school teams that decreased their average number of turnovers per game by 3 ended up winning 2 additional games last season? Thanks to our crew at Crossover for making film sessions easy and efficient by cutting and organizing your plays for you. You can quickly and easily share clipped film with everyone in your program, as well as get interactive shot charts and advanced stats. Visit Crossover with a K.com/PureSweat to try a game for free and start saving yourself hours each week. All right, let's jump into today's topic. Drew, you're known for a lot of things in the basketball space, but I think what you're most renowned for are your individual workouts. Can you give us some insight in what it takes to design an effective player development workout?
I think the first thing you have to do is you have to understand the player, because I think that great workouts are always highly customized and they're efficient and effective. So I think you have to know the player, and that starts with, you know, getting to know them as a person on and off the court, getting to know what makes them tick, whether it's, you know, time drills if they're a guy that likes competing, whether it's, you know, having the end goal in mind, you know, if they want to be an all-star maybe that next year, if they want to be an all-conference player that next year, making sure that you motivate them in that way. But I think the first thing is you have to really understand the player that you're working with so that you can ultimately pack the, you know, maybe hour and a half that you're in the gym with them and get in as much useful information as possible. The second thing is understanding what's useful and what's not for that player. I think that too many times people get caught up into this guy could be the next this guy. You know, everybody right now in high school basketball that's over 6'8" and that has some perimeter skills think they're the next Kevin Durant, and now slowly saying, oh man, we could be Porzingis, you know, those big taller guys that also have the ability to handle the ball, when a lot of them could be a lot more efficient, effective, and ultimately become a lot better players if instead of focusing on trying to be the next Kevin Durant, instead of being the next Dirk Nowitzki, they just focused on getting really, really good at the things that could make them successful in the games now. And I feel like if you have current success, then it's going to help you, you know, with future success as well. So I think the second thing is understanding what's useful. And a lot of times the way I figure out what is useful for that player is by diving into film and really finding what are their strengths and what are their weaknesses. We're going to try to lock in on their strengths, maximize their strengths, put them in spots on the floor and in different situations that really utilize their strengths, whereas we're really going to try to avoid their weaknesses so that instead of having to spend a bunch of time on their weaknesses, we just really just don't put them in those opportunities where they have to struggle in those stressful environments in the game.
Drew, now I know you work mostly with elite level NBA and college guys, but I would imagine at the high school level, in addition to watching film, it's probably important to talk to the player's coach as well to figure out exactly what their role is on the team and what they would need to do to expand that.
100%. I even do that at the highest level. So the first thing that we do after a season's over is we get into the film and we break it down. Normally I do that on my own, and then after that I'll go through with them and we just talk through everything. Because after the season's over, you have a ton of downtime where you need to let your body rest. And so during that downtime, you can still get better without, you know, beating down your body by watching film, analyzing what you did last season, and then ultimately building a strategic strategy for the following, you know, off summer or some all for the following summer that'll help you make sure that you're better when you show up to practice next season. Then we also talk to their coaches, we talk to their front office, et cetera, at the highest level. Obviously, in the high school and college level, you would just kind of talk directly to your coaches. But you need to see what are you going to be doing next season that maybe you didn't do this season, and what are the things that you didn't do this season that they were expecting from you that you have to be able to, you know, get better at so that you can ultimately do them the following season. So there's a ton of dialogue. Everybody that's involved in the process has a say, and we make sure that it's really a group effort to put together this strategic program that's going to make sure and ensure that they get the results that they want instead of just hoping that they get the results and kind of going about it in a daily matter. So everything that we do from day one to the last day of the summer is already drawn out before it even happens. Obviously, we're going to have to make tweaks and adjustments along the way based on the results that they're getting throughout the summer. But we never focus on more than three areas in a whole offseason, which means in any given workout, it's going to be super in-depth, and we're only going to be covering one, maybe two topics during that day so that we can really dive into the nuances of the skills that make or break the moves in games.
Okay, Drew, let's actually look at the workout itself. Now, I know most of what you do is going to be customized, but I'm going to ask you to kind of generalize a little bit here. So as far as a player development workout, let's say you've got 90 minutes that you're working out with a player. What's kind of the rhythm and flow and template that you usually use just from a general perspective? You know, maybe start with form shooting and then move to this and then move to that. Do you have kind of a general flow?
Yeah, we have a big-time routine that I use with almost every one of my guys. Obviously, big guys and guards vary a little bit because, you know, say there's a big guy that, you know, maybe doesn't shoot three-pointers. We don't need him to work on three-pointers unless we're trying to expand his mid-range game. But for the most part, all of my players, because even my big guys, you know, Joel Embiid is one of my biggest guy, and he makes a lot of three-pointers as well. So almost all of my players use a routine that, you know, I started using with Brad Beal when he was actually in high school. And it's funny because people that come to watch Brad's workouts, they always, the first question that I get after the workout, they always ask, like, about the beginning. And the reason is because for the first maybe 10, 15 minutes, Brad and I don't even talk about basketball and I don't instruct him what to do. He just is in such a routine that he knows exactly the warm-up. So he'll come in, we'll do our progressive form shooting, meaning starting at the rim and then slowly back our way up. We make like five and then take, you know, a big step back all the way until the free throw line. When we get to the free throw line, we do some pound stuff shooting, which just basically means quick dribble pickups. We're working on right dribble pickups, left dribble pickups. Then we also start adding footwork into it. So right, left, right, and hop. And then also with no footwork, just so that he gets clean pickups, because we know that that's so important when you're shooting off the dribble. Then we just do five spots times five makes in the mid-range. So just catch and shoot, just five makes at the mid-range. And then we go seven spots times three in a row threes. And by the time they do all of that, they should be fairly loose. But then I always like to get them doing some moving, so then we go right into finishing. I always talk about the big skills in basketball, you know, or being able to guard, you know, play defense, be able to knock down shots, be able to finish around the rim, be able to handle pressure, and then be able to make good decisions. And so if those are the five main things, we need to be spending the majority of our time on those. So before we even start the workout, our routine consists of, you know, all of those, you know, kind of form shots to make sure our mechanics are locked in. We get dribble pickups. We get different footwork into shots. We get a round of mid-range jump shots, a round of three-pointers, and then we go into finishes, and we normally have five finishes that we do on both sides so that now we get a ton of good touches around the basket at different angles, and then we start our workout. So that's kind of our warm-up that we do with everybody. If it's a big guy, instead of maybe shooting three-pointers, we'll do hooks, because I think hooks are so important for big guys. So we'll go right hooks, left hooks, both baseline and mid. And then also, if it's a big guy, we'll do some gray area work, which is like the short corner work, the dunker spot, depending on what you kind of call it. But we'll do some work from there where they have to catch, get in a close stance position and finish, catch, close stance, take a hard dribble into the defender's chest and finish, and then also finish on the opposite side of the rim. So that's a normal warm-up. And then after that, like I said earlier, we'll lock in on one or two topics. Usually what we'll do is You know, say we're working on ball screens. Instead of just saying ball screens, I mean, that's so big and so generic that we'll lock in. We'll say, all right, today we're going to work on, you know, when we're attacking an ice defense, which is like downing, icing, blueing, all the same coverage, basically when the on-ball defender is forcing you towards the baseline and the big guy is either up to touch, which means at the level of the screen, or dropping and sagging. And so we'll lock in on one coverage and we'll say, all right, let's first talk about the pace that we need to attack this thing. Second, what are the angles that we need to attack it? Third, you know, hey, if this guy's doing, you know, if this guy's really jamming you, you know, how far should we retreat up? We're going to talk about everything, the pace, the angles, the reads, the decisions. Also, we're going to give them a progression so that they can understand what do we want to try to get first, second, third, and fourth. Because I think that too many times players have all these reads in their head and they come off the screen and now they're thinking about the 75 things they can do instead of saying, okay, listen, number one is if the guy drops, you know, I'm just going to take the pocket jump shot. Number two is if the guy, you know, drops but leaves room middle, then I'm going to split through and attack. Option number three is if he's taken away the middle, then I'm going to try to throw him a little bit more middle by throwing an inside out or a stunt in the pocket and then attack and get around him. If you simplify it for guys and make it where basically there's an A, B, or C, or even at the high school level, I might just say yes, no, where, you know, say in high school there's a lot of blitzes on ball screens. You would just say, can you split the screen, yes or no? If yes, then split the screen. If no, then try to get around the hedger. And if you can simplify it that much, then players are going to be better decision makers, which ultimately is going to give you better in-game results.
I love that. So you had mentioned the five main things, and I think most coaches and skill trainers can kind of picture what to do regarding shots and finishes. And that was an excellent description of how you're breaking down and working on a player's ability to make decisions. Absolutely love that. From an individual workout standpoint, so if I'm assuming it's just you and a player, what do you do to help work on their defense? And what do you do to help simulate the type of pressure that they're going to face when they play?
Number one, I'm spoiled. We always talk about I live in like the perfect world where I have, you know, four, five, six interns at every workout, and I can actually put, you know, a full five, you know, guys on defense so that people can make progressive reads. But if I wasn't in a perfect world and when I was working out guys one-on-one with nobody else in the gym, and last night I'm in New York at 2 a.m., I'm in the gym with Langston Galloway by myself, nobody else was there. What we do to actually work on defense is, you know, we work on closeouts. We work on, you know, if you get beat, how to recover, you know, beating them to the second spot instead of the first spot. Where to have your hands positioned, you know, how to have a high hand and a hand kind of riding their hip in the NBA. Obviously in high school and college, they call that hand check sometimes. But in the NBA, they allow it, so we work on it. You can work on a ton of stuff on your own. But then if you get into actions, if you get into guarding pin downs, if you get into guarding ball screens, that's when it's important to get multiple people in the gym so that they can simulate what they're going to see in games. You know, the one thing that I can't do is I can't simulate the length or the athleticism that my guys, my NBA guys, are going to see in games. You know, they're not going to be guarded by a 5'11", a guy that has average athletic ability. But what I can do is I can be more physical because there's no referee calling fouls on me. I'm also a lot faster than the average NBA player. Obviously, there's some guys that Russell Westbrook, John Wall, those kind of guys that are a lot faster than me. But I'm definitely in the upper half of NBA starting point guards as far as quickness goes. So I can simulate that and at least give them that. But if coaches are maybe a little bit older, a little bit slower, they've lost a step, I would just highly encourage getting multiple people in the gym. And, you know, one thing that I think is important is the balance of individual workouts where it's one on zero, where you can lock in on that player's strengths and weaknesses and what they need to focus on and really give them in-depth teaching. And then also mixing in live simulated gameplay, whether that's one-on-one stuff or one-on-one with dummy help side defenders and gap defenders, and then one-on-one ball screen stuff where you have a screener and then they're playing one-on-one and you have to, you know, simulate using a ball screen. Because I think that so many times there's players that get pretty good in workouts and in these perfect case scenarios, but in the game it never happens like that. And when there's pressure, when things aren't going right, when the refs aren't calling the game tight, etc., those players that have only worked out against, you know, air, they always seem to struggle. So if you want to truly simulate the game play, the best thing to do is bring out the guys that they're going to be playing against, or bring out guys that are at that level, or give them as much of what they're going to see in the games as possible, so that ultimately you see the in-game results that you're after.
That's perfect. I mean, that by definition is training with purpose. Now, here's something else that I know we've talked about a few times on previous episodes, but it's one of those topics that I don't think we can talk about too much because it's that important. And it's basically the difference between drills and skills. You know, I know that you have certain go-to drills that you do as part of the warm-up process, but then after that, all of your attention and focus is going into building skills. So an effective player development workout with you is not just a list of 9 ball handling and shooting drills and do those for an hour and go home. Talk a little bit about the importance of skills versus drills. And then one of the things that makes you so remarkable is the way that you've broken down into what you call micro skills and your ability to teach those skills. So if you can just kind of give an overview of the skills versus drills.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, when I started out working guys out when I was in high school, I used a ton of drills and probably not as many skills as I should have. And I used to, you know, see Kobe Bryant do a really good move, and I'd go into the gym and that'd be the first thing that Brad and I worked on. Now, obviously, everything's planned out, strategic, and based on the player. So almost all of our time is based on skills and micro skills. Micro skills are just the little nuances that make or break the skill. So if you're doing a step back, keeping the ball protected on your outside hip so that the defender can't get a touch on the ball. If you're fading away, reclining at the perfect angle and making sure that you extend your lift pocket a little bit higher so that you can get more arc on the ball, so that there's a better drop angle, so that you can make more shots when you're fading away. All those little things go into it. I want to tell one thing, and I think this is going to give the people that are listening the best kind of goal that I can give them as far as developing a workout. If I was going to take somebody through a ball screen workout, ideally, and I really wanted to get the most that I possibly could, and maybe I only get to see them twice a week, so they're not in a perfect case scenario where I get to see my guys twice a day throughout a whole summer. Say you just get to see them twice a week. What I would do is, if you're only seeing them twice a week, I try to make workouts a little bit longer. And a little bit more strategic. So there's going to be a little bit more walking through and talking through, because they have to understand the concepts so that they can ultimately do them on their off days as well when you're not in the gym with them. But what I would do is I would walk them through the defensive side of things first. So let's make up a ball screen workout against a hedge, because you see that a lot in high school and college. So I think that it'd be very good for all these people to understand exactly what I would do. First thing I would do is, if I had a guard and I was trying to teach them exactly everything that I needed to teach them about how to use a ball screen when they're attacking a hedge, I would go on the defensive side first. And so I would do a ton of drills where they have to guard me and work on, you know, keeping me from rejecting the screen. And then, you know, if I do reject, they realize, man, I'm really in trouble because I have no help on that side. Then I would make them, you know, get through the screen. So I would run them into the screen constantly and have them feel how much it sucks to get run into the screen. Then the next thing I would do is make them actually be the hedger, the guy that's blitzing out and trapping the ball screen, and understand how hard it is to contain a split while still being able to move your feet and not give up a blow by when the guard with the ball tries to get around them. The reason I would do it that way is because then when they get on offense, they know all the things that suck to guard. Those are the things we're going to try to do. So since it's so hard to contain a reject, the first thing that we're always going to try to do is reject, because we know if we beat them in that direction, they have no help. Then the second thing we're trying to do is we're trying to run our guy. If we can't reject, we're trying to run our primary on-ball defender into the screen, because that sucks. Then the third thing we're trying to do is, once we run our guy into the screen, we're trying to see if there's a little bit of opening. If there is opening, we're going to fake like we're going uphill and then to create a bigger gap. And then we're going to split through with a long, low crossover. And then obviously we bust through the coverage, and then we have to make a play downhill. And the third thing is, if they close that gap and there's no opening in between the screener and the hedge defender or the blitz guy, then what we're going to do is we're going to fake like we're splitting through so that the defender gets even tighter to the screener, and then we're going to try to beat them around. Those would be our three main reads. Then what we would have to do is we'd have to go back. So I'd show the hole, and I would show those three things. Then we'd go over the micro skills of each one. So we talk about the pace, we talk about the angles. And then finally what we would do is we'd add a decision-making component where first we would do it in a dummy setting with no defense, where when we reject, the first thing we'd do is reject and get downhill and make a layup. The second thing we'd do is reject and then get to open space where we, you know, knock down a mid-range jump shot. The third thing we'd do is reject, drive downhill, a rotating guy comes over, and we have to either dump it off to our big or kick it to the weak side corner or maybe kick it to the opposite slot depending on the rotation of the defense. That would be what we would do. So we'd work on scoring options first and then passing options. And then what we would do is put dummy defense out there and actually have them go through and just reject, 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 and just throw different coverages at them so that eventually we see how well they can make those decisions at real time. And then we do the same thing for split through, and we do the same thing for them getting around the ball screen. But in a nutshell, if you do those, and that takes time, and it's really talking about getting in depth, but after an hour and a half, they literally leave the gym a more aware player and ultimately an improved player because they not only understand it, but they can also do it, and they've got some practice doing it, which is going to lead to in-game translation.
That was brilliant and definitely pure gold. I'm fascinated by the way you kind of reverse engineered that and had them starting outside working in basically to understand the how and the why behind that skill. That's absolutely phenomenal. That's all we've got, y'all. Thanks so much for listening. I hope we helped you raise your game. We want to give a shout-out to our partners at Dr. Dish for revolutionizing basketball training with their state-of-the-art shooting machines and detailed training analytics. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. And please visit our online shop at puresweatbasketball.com for a ton of killer products and resources. All right, it's time to get back in the gym.